In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Friday, November 4th, 2011 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It is the Federal News Countdown every Friday at 3, where we take two people who are experts in the world of the federal government, ask them to choose the news stories from the week that they think are the three most important to people who work for the federal government. They rank them in order from number 3 to number 1, and we count them down on the Federal News Countdown. This week it's John Desenberg of the Performance Institute. Good to see you.
Always great to be here, Francis.
And I would have to say, to my knowledge, you are fan number 1 of the Nationals in the federal community. Dan Mintz is like 1A. And it's great to see you. Thank you for coming.
I don't know if Dan Mintz was at the first day ever at RFK. I was.
I think he was there. So, and if he's listening, we'll know before too long. He'll either tweet or email that he was there. Linda Springer of Ernst & Young is also on the countdown today. It's great to see you. Of course, former OPM director and controller at OMB. Nice to have you in the show today.
Thanks, Francis. Glad to be here.
We were just talking about you in the newsroom this morning because we were recalling Match Game 1500, of which you're the reigning champion.
We need to get that going again.
Well, I have a contestant in mind that I've been trying to line up ever since you won the first time, and I've not been able to do so. So we might have to go farther afield, but we're working on it. It's in the backs of our minds. I'm glad that both of you are here. And the way this works, if you haven't heard the Federal News Countdown before, both Linda and John have chosen the news stories from anywhere in the federal world that they think are the most important news stories to people who work for the federal government. And then they've ranked them in order, and we're going to count them down. And, of course, on a countdown where there are three stories, we start with
number 3.
And, Linda Springer, your third most important federal news story of the week is headlined, "New Reforms Push More IT Sharing and Innovation." It's from the Federal Times. The administration put a lot of emphasis on reforms, and there are a lot of folks that think that maybe there's too much emphasis on reforming and not on what they're actually reforming, if you know what I'm talking about. What do you see here?
Well, there are a couple of key things that caught my eye in this article. One is that you see the budget being one of the drivers here, and kind of a revisiting of the shared service strategy that was started several years ago. OMB is looking to increase the use of shared services. We had been hearing a little bit about this, and I think that OMB will put out a strategy that helps knock down some of these stovepipes and gets agencies thinking about working together again on some of these common services and IT services. It'll be interesting to see if they take this to sort of version 2.0 or 3.0, maybe using the cloud in some way. But I think we'll see a little bit of a resurgence of the shared service center approach.
Now, I talked to a former CIO at an event this week who, after Steve Van Roekel's speech, and this person said, if you have XML first and cloud first is a holdover from Vivek Kundra's tenure, and this story says web services first, virtualized first, future first. You have all these firsts. Which first is really first? Is there potential there for some confusion maybe?
Well, I think that they'll put out some kind of direction on how you can use the earlier firsts in a way to advance to the next set of initiatives. And I think that the eGov group within OMB is the one that's really driving a lot of this, whether it's a financial or an HR or some other type of service. I think that, you know, Steve's group is the one that's really, you know, driving the agenda here.
And Steve Van Roekel in this speech mentioned the fact that we're a month into the year, fiscal year. Still no spending bills. The Senate's passed a couple, and we expect to see some negotiation with the House on those, and maybe some of them passed within the next week or so, maybe two. So there at least is a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel that's not necessarily an oncoming train. But the fact of the matter is, as we sit here today, nothing. How does that impact initiatives like this when people aren't really sure where they're going to be headed numbers-wise?
Well, I think in the budget discussions that are really in a high gear right now, there will be some focus on this, as there usually is with the IT initiatives. The IT budget itself is not an insignificant budget among the federal management programs. And, you know, this will I think, leverage the TxDOT reviews that we saw last year, mm-hmm. and it's all going to come together into what can we do in this next year, particularly to advance these things in that sort of bite-size approach, but in a way that is going to be more cross-agency as opposed to stovepipe.
Linda Springer's story number three in the countdown is from the Federal Times. The headline is New Reforms Push More IT Sharing and Innovation. John Desenberg's story number three is my colleague Jason Miller's story, headlined Representative Lankford Says Training Will Ease Acquisition Workforce Transition. And Congressman Lankford, John, is, I think, taking a little bit of a different tack here, because usually when budget times get tight, the first thing that goes is travel and the second thing that goes is training. So it's interesting to me, I think, that a member of Congress is staking some claim here to the fact that training's not going to go, at least when it comes to the acquisition workforce. We got to keep it if we expect this workforce to improve.
Yeah, I mean, this seems to be the week that Representative Lankford has really surged to the top of the kind of government oversight people on the Hill. I don't know what B got under his bonnet, but something is in the water over there in his office. I actually ran into his senior staffer, and I talked to him a little bit about how the Performance Institute, my gosh, 4 or 5 years ago, was part of the SARA panel, the Service Acquisition Reform panel. And, you know, after I spoke with him, I went back and looked up our recommendations from that group, which was congressionally mandated and part of the law. Mm-hmm. And many of those recommendations haven't even been implemented yet. And you know, you see this, and it is very much like deja vu all over again. And you feel like, my God, where have we spent the last 5 years? We've been talking about this constantly, the 1102s. I was even talking to one agency who is going into high schools with their career people and touting 1102s as an occupation of the future to 11th graders. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's incredible, but yet they still have not gotten over the hurdle, and there's this gigantic skills gap. And one of the things that Representative Lankford, I think, has been talking about a little bit here is the increasing confusion and complexity of where to use a contract, which contract to use, which BPA, which multiple schedule, which small business, Alaska Native Corporation. I mean, it's become a real train wreck, mm-hmm. with all of these vehicles. And you know, you talk to anyone, and there's so much unhappiness with the way that things like that Alaska Native Corporation situation was handled and how it still is being continued unchecked. And so I think the training is just the tip of the iceberg for this congressman. And I'm very personally very excited to see him starting to pay attention to this, because this is a ton of money.
Here's the passage in Jason's piece that is linked up, by the way, at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. That jumped out at me. To that end, Lankford's proposing a series of hearings over the next few months to try to educate his counterparts that penny-wise, pound-foolish approach many in Congress have taken over the years no longer is a good one. He said the challenge is getting members to understand the benefits of spending a little money to save a lot of money. In an era when a lot of hearings seem to be happening on the Hill in both chambers to make a point that the chairman wants to make, I think it's interesting that this hearing is going to happen, and it's actually the reason that hearings exist, which is for members of Congress to learn more about an issue to try to decide how to make policy.
Well, it takes something like this, I think, where it's okay to say, well, frankly, I don't know much about government acquisition. Mm-hmm. And so it's one of these, I think, rare areas where congressmen can admit to themselves and other people that they do need to learn about this stuff. And, you know, the American people are not stupid. Everyone knows you have to invest in order to get real savings. And this is just basic common sense when everyone knows how many billions are spent in contracting. It just makes perfect sense.
John Desenberg's story number three in the countdown is Jason Miller's federalnewsradio.com story, headlined Representative Lankford Says Training Will Ease Acquisition Workforce Transition. And Congressman Lankford is the chairman of the House Oversight and Government Reform Subcommittee on Technology, Information Policy, Intergovernmental Relations and Procurement Reform, maybe the longest subcommittee title in Congress. You can read that story on federalnewsradio.com. Coming up, story number two, as chosen this week on the Federal News Countdown by Linda Springer and John Desenberg on In Depth with Francis Rose.
How would you like up to $50? out of the blue. That's the wellness incentive from the Blue Cross Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. Complete our Blue Health Assessment and get up to $50 for qualified medical expenses. $50 out of the blue. Who knew? To learn more about the Federal Employee Program, visit whonew.fepblue.org or call 1-800-411-BLUE.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit myvillagegreen.com. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Garden of Life and Himalaya Herbal Healthcare.
As the single largest generator of jobs for the Department of Defense, Lockheed Martin's F-35 represents more than just innovation and freedom. It's an advanced technology program that fuels our nation's economic engine. As a leading-edge fighter, the F-35 has unprecedented capabilities that will help America and its allies defend freedom. And it's creating direct and indirect jobs for over 120,000 Americans and impacting more than 1,300 suppliers in 47 states across the U.S. Software developers in California, steel workers in Pennsylvania, and engineers in Georgia are all working to secure our skies. The F-35 Lightning II program. Securing freedom, securing jobs, securing America's future. To learn more, visit F35.com.
We raise high for GW basketball. Some raise high with the jump out of your seat, buzzer beating, hands to the sky scream. Others give their all in the GW fight song, Raising High the Buff and Blue. Raising High is more than just a movement. It's the movement for Colonials basketball, where senators and students, friends and families come together for the thrill of victory. Raise High with GW Basketball today. Call 202-994-7325 or visit gwsports.com now.
In anticipation of an upcoming engineering services contract supporting NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center, a team of premier engineering companies is seeking outstanding professionals to work on NASA's current and future space and Earth science satellite missions. Join the Kinetic North America team Wednesday, November 9th between 2 and 7 p.m. at the Greenbelt Marriott in Maryland. Learn more about the Omnibus Multidiscipline Engineering Services contract and its exciting career opportunities. For more information, visit kinetic-na.com.
I'm Amy Morris. Here's a look at Friday's Federal Drive. What do you need to know about your choices for health, dental, and vision insurance during the upcoming open season? And the FCC is gearing up for the first test of the nationwide emergency alert system. That and more Friday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. For all the latest federal news, check us out, federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This week's Federal News Countdown features stories selected by John Desenberg and Linda Springer as the most important federal news stories of the week. And we're up to
number two.
Linda Springer's second most important federal news story of the week is from the Federal Times, and the headline is ISA proposes replacing FERS pensions with TSP-type plan. Now, from your perspective, as I looked at this, what I didn't take out of this, and maybe the legislation hasn't even doesn't even specify it, but it sounds like there would be an employee, a FERS employee would actually have kind of two TSP plans or two accounts or something. I was a little unclear on that. What did you make out of that?
Yeah, I think that's relatively true. A TSP plan is very similar in a lot of respects to a defined contribution plan. So in effect, you would have two types that are very similar, along with the third leg of the stool, Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
There are several things about this that are of interest, I'll say. And one is the notion that that I think is driving this is that we want to get rid of an unfunded liability.
Mm-hmm.
Well, FERS doesn't have an unfunded liability. The plan that has the unfunded liability is the CSRS plan. So that's a little bit of a point of interest here. The idea, so if the idea is, well, listen, we just don't want to fund these anymore. The private sector's gotten away from a defined benefit contribution type of structure. Although I will tell you that if you read some of the actuarial literature, there is some resurgence of interest in defined benefit pension plans.
Hmm.
Now, whether it should stay exactly the way FERS is a different question. But is it, you know, I think that there, you'll see other alternatives start to emerge on maybe modification to FERS. For example, one that we had looked at was, should someone with just 5 years of service then be fully vested in some of the things that some of the plans? And so, you know, there might be some modifications like that as opposed to just, you know, replacing the whole FERS plan.
Mm-hmm.
But FERS by law has to be funded. And so, you know, I haven't seen anything yet about cost figures associated with this. So what's really driving it, I guess, is a little bit of a question mark here.
You know, I don't know what FERS Congressman Issa is so concerned about, because I was a federal employee for 15 years and took my FERS TSP with me. And what does the government contribute, Linda? 1%? Or, I mean, isn't it mostly employee contributions?
No, not to FERS it isn't.
Okay, so
not
TSP,
to FERS. TSP is different
TSP
than FERS.
TSP is different
yeah.
than FERS.
Yeah, FERS is a cost to the government, but that is part of the benefits package that, you know, again, is pretty generous by comparison, and maybe that's part of the thing, benchmarking this to what the federal or what the commercial profile is for benefit costs. But, you know, again, I think this sort of came out like, here's an idea, and but you don't see a lot of the justification for it.
Mm-hmm. I was going to try to, as I read the story this morning, I was going to try to take advantage of your actuarial experience and see if you might have at least thought about this already. Try to draw a comparison between a defined benefit, defined contribution plan based on these things, and take an employee, just say, who retires at 65 and lives to 85 or 90, and just get a comparison to see what kind of return on investment somebody would have to realize in a defined contribution plan in order to match or exceed what a defined benefit plan yields them.
Yeah, it's
really.
See
what I'm getting at?
Yeah, I do. And it's not something that I could just answer on the
spot. Sure.
Because right. You really need to know specifics of the plans. Uh-huh. For example, do you have any sort of investment options in the DC plan versus a DB plan? Is the DB plan, the assumptions for the DB plan, how are they set up? You know, some of the options that have come out here are, instead of having a final 3 salary, maybe you do final 5 mm-hmm. for the basis for the pension. Or maybe there are ways that you change the number of years that would, you'd apply to it. So I think it's more likely that you'll come out with something that has a modification to the DB plan that is currently there versus just a total replacement of it, certainly with a DC. When you already have the TSP, it really almost doesn't make sense.
Well, and that's what, when this story first came out, that's what I didn't understand. It seemed to me that maybe, at least in the case of the government, you change the rules to allow people to just contribute more to their TSP mm-hmm. plan and avoid the whole idea of duplication. If you're going to build another system that's similar to or just like the TSP, you already have that one and it works really well.
Which is one of the things that you do see in the private sector. They will just maybe beef up mm-hmm. or, you know, add options or increase the amount you can contribute or increase a match,
yep.
a company match into a 401k, which essentially is what the TSP.
John, are people doing enough of a good job connecting issues like this to performance at the agencies?
Oh, I don't think so. And I'll tell you, you know, based on what I hear in the agencies, this kind of talk, and especially here in the article about Senator Coburn, who we all know, the famous Senator Coburn, his plan evidently would be to cancel FERS pensions and replace them with nothing. And, you know, what is very transparent here is that much of this legislation has very little to do with management efficiency, benchmarking against the private sector. It is mainly, in many people's minds, anti-federal employee, vindictive, trying to make federal employees' benefits worse than the private sector, seemingly, according to Senator Coburn. And, you know, this is vindictive and mean-spirited, and I agree with Linda. The problem that they claim they're trying to solve is really not a problem at all.
Linda, you mentioned one thing that has been kind of a boogeyman over the years, and that's for federal employees, and that's changing the high 3 to a high 5. I thought it was interesting. Mike Causey ran some numbers, and most people, the impact is really not as big as people make it out to be. People get a lot more excited about it than I think they would really find worth the excitement.
Well, it's especially true right now because salaries are relatively flat. Mm-hmm. So that's one. Let me just say two other quick points. One is that what happens here also is going to impact Congress and staff and mm-hmm. things like that. So, you know, I don't think we want to lose sight of that.
Yeah.
The other thing here, though, and this is a good place to mention it, one of the things, this goes to John's point about the bullseye on the federal workforce, is this notion of double dipping.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the context I want to mention it with pensions. When someone leaves, retires, starts to take their annuity, and then they come back on a dual comp waiver, right? That pension is for their service prior to coming back. It's
mm-hmm.
that period of service. It doesn't increase. It's for that period. Coming back as a, at least under some of the proposals we had, coming back and being paid for the work going forward is a different stream of work time that's being compensated. Same as if you went anywhere else after you retired and got a job.
Right.
So this notion that it's double dipping, it's bad, we're being paid twice, we're paying people twice, is just totally wrong. And so I wanted to make that point. I was glad to come on and be able to do that in this context.
It seems, when you put it in that context, it seems like people are just getting what they've been promised. If you were promised that you work this many years of service and you get this annuity, you get that annuity, and if you choose to take another job with the federal government, that's
your future
service.
You're being
yes.
compensated. It has nothing to do with your prior service.
Linda Springer's story number two in the countdowns from the Federal Times this week. The headline is ISA proposes replacing FERS pensions with TSP type plan, and you can read it linked up now on the in-depth page at federalnewsradio.com. John Desenberg's story number two is next when the Federal News Countdown continues on In Depth with Francis Rose. It's Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Department of Veterans Affairs is taking another step toward the deployment of tablet computers to its workforce. VA has sent a request for information to industry in the hopes of buying a mobile device management platform that will let it secure and manage tens of thousands of tablets across the enterprise. The plans call for a deployment of 10,000 tablets running Apple's iOS, Google's Android, and Microsoft's Windows Mobile to start. They plan to eventually increase that to up to 100,000 tablets.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Are you a mid-career professional thinking about improving your digital skills? Or maybe you're trying to retool with a focus on using social networking? American University's online certificate in digital media skills allows you to work full-time while gaining digital media skills to advance in your career or reposition yourself in the job market. The digital future is here. Learn more about American University's graduate certificate in digital media skills at american.edu/soc.
Caps fans, don't miss an exciting matchup when the Dallas Stars visit Verizon Center on Tuesday, November 8th. Caps games are always huge events. The fans are always pumped up, and it's always a great time. This is the hottest ticket in town. The Caps have sold out 112 straight games at Verizon Center, and tickets are extremely limited, so make sure you get yours. Call 202-397-SEAT or log on to washingtoncaps.com/singleticks and do your part in building America's hockey capital.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
Job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview.
Yeah.
And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C., Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
Short on vitamin D. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. A study indicates African Americans in low sunlight areas have a particularly high risk of vitamin D deficiency, but even 18% of white people in the same areas are deficient. Dr. Adam Murphy of the Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine saw this in almost 500 Chicago men. Sunshine triggers the skin to make vitamin D, and Dr. Murphy says the pigment melanin, which makes skin darker, interferes with sunlight absorption. So he says,
the answer for African Americans at least won't be to be in the sun more. It's probably going to be taking supplements or increasing their dietary intake.
The study, presented at an American Association for Cancer Research meeting, was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Have you been in government contracting, procurement, or acquisition for 30 years? NCMA has. Join the National Contract Management Association for the 30th Annual Government Contract Management Conference, November 14th and 15th in Bethesda, Maryland. The conference draws more than 1,000 government contract management professionals. Hear from respected speakers such as Scott Gould, Deputy Secretary, Department of Veterans Affairs, Martha Johnson, Administrator, GSA, and Shay Assad, Director, Defense Pricing, DOD. Learn more at ncmahq.org today.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown this week with Linda Springer and John Desenberg choosing the stories on the countdown. And John Desenberg's story number two is Jason Miller's story on federalnewsradio.com, headlined OMB in Congress to put grant-making process under more scrutiny. And we talked a little bit about this during the break, and I've talked about it with some other folks in the last couple of weeks that are looking at the grants process a lot of times not with new eyes, having looked at this for a long time. There's a lot of uncertainty and a lot of opaqueness about the federal grants process, isn't there, John?
Well, and I think there's a lot of just misunderstanding or no understanding with the American public mm-hmm. about how on earth could we be spending more money in grants than we are in all of the contracting for goods and services in the federal government. I think very few people would guess that, and that's what happens to be true now. And you know, I think we need to come to an understanding in this country about what are we demanding from our grantees when we're shelling out this kind of incredible money? What do we expect back as a government and as a country? And I don't think we really know. I'm starting to do some of this work and strategically look at how people are doing this and what are the performance measures around grants. And to be quite honest, there are not a lot of performance measures around grants.
What is the issue with grants, Linda, and why do you think this is such a hard thing to get a handle on?
It's a big number. I think there have been some attempts before, but the funding for it hasn't always been there. But I think what John's saying is really important, and OMB's, I think, starting to refocus on the performance. Are you getting what you paid for in mm-hmm. this? So as much as the administrative part, I think it's as much about, you know, the accountability and transparency on the performance side.
You know, and I don't want to mention the agency, Francis, but I know of an agency when they had to count how many grants they had out there, they literally went around and found all the paper files for each grant. So, you know, the process is not good. There's a mention in this article of the line of business. And the line of business was supposed to kind of consolidate some of this administrative activity, but it really hasn't. Not everyone's bought into these lines of business providers. There's something else that I think is people should know about. It's called the RPPR. That's the form that OMB created, and it was signed into law this spring, or actually in 2010, and still it's languishing. People are not following this form, which requires performance measures and accountability. So, you know, as I said in the break, Francis, are grants just money that we're giving to graduate students and universities as part of the mission of the government, or are we really going to demand something for all of that money? And when are the American people going to see what they're getting?
Jason points out in this story that people first started to think a lot harder about the grant-making process during the Recovery Act, because that's how the vast majority of the money that was given out was given out. It wasn't spent directly by the federal government. A lot of it went to states and local jurisdictions in the form of grants. This passage that Jason writes about, where OMB Director Jack Lew merging two existing grant oversight boards into a new Council on Financial Assistance Reform, the Grants Policy Council and the Grants Executive Board merged together. Neither one of them has been around for a particularly long period of time. Does that make a difference structurally, do we think? Or is this just a step by OMB to say, well, we don't really need two doing the same thing. We'll combine them into one and move
forward.
There
are so many councils, and I know Linda served on a lot of councils. And a council doesn't do much for you if they don't have really strong authority. And, and as I've said, even inside large departments, you see different grants, policies, different grants, procedures, tracking. It is really a gigantic mess, and I really hope that we can see some real structure. You know, one of the things that they are doing are going from grants to something called cooperative agreements. And I'm sure you know, a lot of the people may have heard of a cooperative agreement, which allows the federal government to be a lot more involved on a tactical level with the grantee to make sure that something gets done that the federal government wants done. So there is some movement, but we have a long way to go with this.
Linda, the grants process is, as we've talked about, very complicated. There are a lot of moving parts. What would make sense if you were sitting in the seat you used to occupy, the controller at OMB? What's the role there, do you think, for trying to help the director at OMB get a handle on this?
Well, I think there are two main aspects here. There's the administrative side and some procedures around that. And I think, you know, a review of those, a streamlining of those to focus just on the ones that really you need to have. You don't want to make the process for applying for a grant so cumbersome that, you know, while it safeguards, but it shuts it down. Now, at the same time, though, you know, a review of the internal control over that, some of those kind of things, are the procedures really being followed, almost like an audit out at the agencies. But then along with that, I think it's working with other parts of OMB on that performance, setting up those measures that you need in a repository for it.
And, you know, as much as any part of the government, this area, the grants area, is just rife with pork barrel spending. I mean, many, many of these grants are placed particularly in legislation and appropriations bills to direct money to certain groups in certain states. So, you know, Congress, as usual, is kind of talking out of both sides of their mouth on this.
John Desenberg's story number two is Jason Miller's story on grants. The headline is OMB and Congress put grant-making process under more scrutiny. And you can read it and all of the stories on the countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The number one most important federal news stories of the week, as chosen by John Desenberg and by Linda Springer, when the Federal News Countdown continues on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Now there's a simple way to pay for the goods and services your agency needs. Using GSA Smart Pay 2, cardholders can buy large ticket items, make recurring payments, and conduct micro purchases without delays. You can even use GSA Smart Pay 2 to make payments for contracts, grants, utility bills, and much more. Accepted around the world, GSA Smart Pay 2 works just like the charge cards you already know while offering a broad range of benefits. With GSA Smart Pay 2, you gain access to powerful financial tools to provide you with insight and control over your agency's expenses. Best of all, GSA Smart Pay 2 is a proven and effective way to save the government millions of dollars. To find out more about GSA Smart Pay 2, visit smartpay.gsa.gov. That's smartpay.gsa.gov. GSA Smart Pay 2, a simpler, unified way to pay.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Facero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, nutrition, dietary supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources at myvillagegreen.com. Visit Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane.
Newsmakers talk to Emily Kopp.
OPM Director John Barry says policy changes will incorporate lessons from past snow events.
We do have some changes that will be coming forward that will hopefully make it better. To the extent that we can arm our employees to be able to work effectively from alternative locations, that's better service to the taxpayer and allows them to do their jobs and keep the essential functions of government moving regardless of what the weather is.
Hear the entire interview online at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
You are listening to the Federal News Countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Linda Springer of Ernst & Young and John Desenberg of the Performance Institute both have chosen the news stories they think are the three most important federal news stories of this week to people who work for the federal government. And we are up to
number one.
Linda Springer's most important federal news story of the week is from federalnewsradio.com. Emily Kopp's story headlined, House Committee to Consider Across-the-Board Cuts for Feds. And this is a classic example, Linda, of the age-old debate of how do you right-size the workforce? And I'll talk about my idea of right-sizing in a minute, but this the word usually is the salami slicing versus surgical cuts. I don't know of anybody that thinks that salami slicing is a good idea, and yet here we are again.
Yeah, it just keeps coming up, and it's either this or, well, we're going to let it go down by attrition.
Mm-hmm.
Neither one of those is a smart way to manage your workforce. And the reality of it is that you need a certain amount of people to perform a function. If you think that the cost of labor in the government is too high, then don't do as many things.
Yeah.
If you want to cut the workforce by 10%, cut out 10% of the programs and the things that people are doing. But from a human capital standpoint, as well as just a smart approach to performance, if you cut down on the force that's having to deliver the results for you, whether it's across the board or by attrition, you're going to end up with a mismatch. You're not going to have the right match of talent and resources to the project that you're trying to achieve. Again, I would say that these are people who are more concerned with the cost of the workforce than they are with the results. And if they really believe that it's cost too much, get rid of some of the programs, but have the right number of people with the right skills to do the jobs.
If you've listened to me talk about this issue and you're hearing Linda say what she's saying, I swear to you, we haven't colluded before this show, but that's exactly, Linda, what I've talked about on this program, that right-sizing the workforce requires right-sizing the work. And I haven't seen anybody at any agency yet go to the Hill and say, Mr. Congressman, Ms. Congresswoman, you want our top line budget next year to be 20% less than it is this year. That's fine. Help us figure out which 20% of the work we no longer will be required to do. What oversight will you give up? Will we not be held accountable for because we have 80% of the resources that we had before? I've never seen anybody from an agency do that. I've never seen anybody from OMB ask the Hill to work in that area, and I don't understand why.
I don't either, but you would hope that there are people at both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue that will say, look, however well-intentioned this is, it's not going to get you the result that you want. And in the end, it's exactly what you just said, Francis, that whatever percentage you want to spend less in workforce costs, that's the percentage of programs or projects that you need to cut back.
And I think the onus here, John, is on Congress, because they're the ones that when Linda at OPM or OMB didn't get something done that they wanted done, she's the one that had to go to the Hill and explain it. Meanwhile, it might have been a case where they said, well, we're going to cut your budget, and so that doesn't exist anymore.
Well, you know, maybe this show's been a little too agreeable so far. And let me just politely disagree with both of you just on a small point here. And, of course, all the talk on performance warms my heart, but Linda's point that there are a certain number of people needed to perform a function. Yes, but the function has a lot of baked in admin and process and reporting to Congress and layers upon layers of non mission oriented work built into it. And so when you say there's a certain number of people needed to do the work, yes, but 10 of them are involved in non-productive activity that Congress requires, like report writing, etc. So I don't think it's quite that simple. I think some of the work needs to be looked at first as well, which is what is this non-value-added work that's going on?
Yeah, and that's a version, I think, same of what we're saying.
Yeah, I don't think you're disagreeing much with what we're saying, John.
Yeah, it's another way to look at it. Instead of just getting rid of a whole program, it's looking at activities associated with the program that are not value added.
Right.
But either way, it's cutting back on a requirement or something that requires work effort, as opposed to just saying, let's have 90% of the people, but still have to do all those things that you just mentioned.
Yeah. Well, and I'll maybe even take it out one step further and ask why folks at agencies aren't willing to go to the GAO report on duplication in government and say, all right, Mr. or Ms. Congressperson, Senator, we have, here's the list in our agency of the programs that we do that somebody else does. Now, maybe you don't like the way that we're doing it, or maybe you like the way that we're doing it, but these are happening already somewhere in government. We don't want to give them up because we think we do them pretty good. But if you're going to give us X percent less, here's a good place to start to take away X percent of our responsibility and our mission to be able to continue to fulfill the mission that we still have.
And they've gotten themselves into this bind to some degree because of this whole doing more with less mantra, which, frankly, I despise. Yeah. And that message to Congress gives Congress the feeling that we can just keep cutting because you must have many too many people. So I really think we should just ban the term doing more with less. That's an impossibility, and it's frankly very counterproductive.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
That has become one of my pet peeves.
Yeah, mine is phrase. Do less with less.
Yeah. Exactly. And I've started to hear that a lot more at ELC this year. Yeah. That buzz seems to be bubbling up underneath where there's at least at the C level at the agencies, I heard some CFOs and CIOs saying, you know what, the reality of it is, whether they like it on the Hill yet or not, we're going to have to do less with less because if we're going to cut more, we're going to start cutting bone. And so we will obviously keep an eye on that. This whole issue of cuts is the subject of Linda Springer's story number one on the Federal News Countdown this week. Emily Kopp's story headline, House Committee to Consider Across-the-Board Cuts for Feds. That idea of across-the-board cuts for feds is one of the things we'll talk about later on in hour number two of the program with federally employed women. They have submitted their opinion to Congressman Issa and the House Oversight Committee on these cuts, and you'll hear what they think in hour number two of In-Depth on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll wrap up this week's Federal News Countdown with John Desenberg's story number one when we come back in just minutes on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
American company creating American jobs with American pride? That's Hyundai.
You come in with a great attitude. You're happy to be at work.
I am happy to be here. I'm proud to be here.
This is the highest paying job I've ever had.
Good wages. Great wages.
The benefits are great.
I love the pay and benefits.
The benefits of working at Hyundai are awesome.
Hyundai is building more than cars. We're rebuilding pride in America.
This is not just a job. This is a career. We have a career here.
I feel a sense of pride. I feel a sense of accomplishment, something that we all can rejoice in because we've done this together.
They allow you to grow with the company. That is Hyundai. That's the difference.
I love the people. They're extraordinary.
Working with pride. Working at Hyundai.
Let me tell you, I've got a sense of pride.
I love my job.
Proud partner in the American dream. Dream with us at HyundaiAmerica.us.
Hyundai is an all-American success story.
Hyundai. New thinking. New possibilities.
Where did you leave it? Where could it have possibly gone? It's frustrating because you used to have your motivation with you all the time, and now, that's okay. We'll help you find it. First, let's find your reason. You know, your reason. What's that thing that makes you want to live to an age where you can say whatever you want to whomever you want, and somehow it becomes charming? Next, find your thing. What is that healthy thing you actually love doing? There's got to be one, right? Finally, go find your partner. Who's the ping to your pong? The downward to your dog? Who'll keep your butt moving and vice versa? Find all of those things. We're pretty sure your motivation will magically appear. But if you're still having trouble finding it, try looking really, really hard in the mirror. We're Kaiser Permanente, and we're here to help you find your motivation to thrive.
Visit kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
We raise high for GW basketball. Some raise high with the jump out of your seat, buzzer beating, hands to the sky scream. Others give their all in the GW fight song, Raising High the Buff and Blue. Raising High is more than just a movement. It's the movement for Colonials basketball, where senators and students, friends and families come together for the thrill of victory. Raise High with GW Basketball today. Call 202-994-7325 or visit gwsports.com now.
As an increased number of government agencies transform to a cloud infrastructure, IT is being viewed less as a product buy and more as a service. From acquisition and procurement to the SLAs that map them, the transition to storage, email, and infrastructure as a service stands to rewrite the basic processes of federal IT. Join AFSEA Bethesda and Dave McClure, the associate administrator at GSA, on November 16th at the Bethesda North Marriott to discuss how agencies are managing this transition. Register today at afseabethesda.org/NOVBreakfast.
Headed to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor, Federal News Radio can be heard crystal clear on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. It's the same great station, just on an added frequency. Get the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Hear exclusive interviews with the movers and shakers in the federal arena. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
Back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week with John Desenberg of the Performance Institute and Linda Springer of Ernst & Young. And John, your story number one is from the Federal Times. The headline is Labor Partnerships Talk But Few Results. And the first line says, nearly 2 years after President Obama reestablished labor management partnerships at all agencies, their record of accomplishment is thin. Is that because, do you think, these partnerships are not working, they're not working right, or there just isn't enough time given that these are gearing up again after not being around for a while?
Well, I don't know that, I can't diagnose it exactly, Francis, but I can tell you their accomplishments are none, slim to none. I mean, thin is being kind of optimistic. I think none almost would be a better word, because the two examples that they tout in this article, what happened in Pearl Harbor, for instance, that started actually before these partnerships were even formed. So, mm-hmm. They're claiming success for things that were clearly not started on their watch. And, what brought this to my attention was a discussion that I had with some of the unions who are involved in this, work, as well as OPM. And what seemed to come up again and again is, the federal employee is really being bashed on the Hill. And so whatever happens, we don't want these partnerships to kind of highlight poor performers or a way to increase performance and accountability. So we're just going to kind of tiptoe around that issue because we don't want to be seen as another group that's bashing employees. Well, what are we left with? We're left with not much. At the October 11th hearing, if anyone heard it, and you can also watch it online on the congressional website, Mr. Berry claims that his two top priorities that he shares with Senator Akaka are performance and accountability, number one, and hiring, number two. Well, we know this week hiring kind of blew up on him with USA Jobs. And this work, the labor partnerships, is not going well either. The performance document that they are starting to float out of this group was the most general, vague thing. I got a chance to look at an advanced copy, and it really looked like it could have just been written overnight by a grad student. It didn't have much meat on the bones. I don't think these partnerships have very much authority. And I got to say, one of the things that Linda mentioned earlier really strikes me as what this partnership should be talking about, which is the skills mismatch in the government, the atrophying skills of certain employees and training whatever needs to happen around that. And strategically, what I'm starting to see is that as agencies' budgets are cut, they don't have the flexibility to even move people from activity to activity because – there's a gigantic skills mismatch. And so some of these issues need to be discussed in this labor management partnership. There needs to be a serious discussion of what comes after NSPS. What are we going to do for performance? And, you know, I just don't see it happening. And it's a part of my tremendous disappointment with John Barry at this point and OPM.
Linda, this story says when George W. Bush took office in 2001, he immediately ended the labor management partnerships that had been in place under President Clinton. So these didn't exist government-wide. They lived on in a few individual agencies that chose to continue them. But when you were at OPM, this wasn't a general policy of the government the way that it is now. What do you see in these, either on the plus side or the minus side?
Well, I'm going to confess that I haven't looked at it as closely as John has. Mm-hmm. But I'll say that I've seen relationships with union representatives and, you know, other agency leaders work really well. And we had some good experiences within OPM.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen other times when it didn't accomplish a whole lot. And with the amount, it takes time to do these things. And so you really, I think, for it to live on, you've got to show some accomplishment out mm-hmm. of it. I think if you get to the end of this administration's term, and there isn't a whole lot more than where it is today, I think it opens it up to the possibility that it might not be re-upped, if only because of the return on the investment, rather than any philosophical issue on how you feel about it.
And even the Republican senators at the October 11th hearing were on board with the concept that frontline employees know a lot of very good, innovative things, and they should be allowed to interact with management in order to create innovation. But it's just not happening with this particular group.
Yeah, and one other thing is, and that's a tease up a great point. This isn't the only way to get that relationship going, to get that interaction.
I'm so sorry that's where we have to leave it. We are running out of time on the Federal News Countdown. Thank you both. Linda, it's great to see you as always.
Thank you, Francis.
And John Desenberg, always fun. We didn't even get a chance to talk about Davey Johnson.
Next time.
It never seems to work for our baseball talk. But John Desenberg's stories, Linda Springer's stories from this week's Federal News Countdown are posted right now on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Federal News Countdown next week because next Friday is Veterans Day. So we'll be back in 2 weeks with a brand new Federal News Countdown and hour number two of today's In-Depth with Francis Rose program right around the corner on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.